ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 71 टाइटल्ड द लॉर्ड ट्रेवल्स टू इंद्रप्रस्थ। टेक्स्ट नंबर 37 एंड 38 एंड 39 टुडे। टेक्स्ट नंबर 37 इज ऑन द बोर्ड। अंतःपुर जनै प्रीत्या मुकुन्दः फुल्ललोचनै स संभ्रमैर अभ्युपेतः प्राविशद राजमन्दिरम्। अन्तःपुर जनै प्रीत्या मुकुन्दः फुल्ललोचनै स संभ्रमैरभ्युपेतः प्राविशद राजमन्दिरम्। अन्तःपुर जनै प्रीत्या मुकुन्दः फुल्ललोचनै स संभ्रमैरभ्युपेतः प्राविशद राजमन्दिरम्। मुकुन्दः फुल्ललोचने संभ्रमैरभ्युपेतः फुल्ललोचने स संभ्रमैरभ्युपेतः प्राविशद राजमन्दिरम्। मातरिस अन्तःपुर जनै प्रीत्या मुकुन्दः फुल्ललोचनै स संभ्रमैरभ्युपेतः प्राविशद। वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन्स। अन्तःपुर ऑफ द इंपीरियल प्रेसिंक्ट जनै बाय द पीपल प्रीत्या लविंगली मुकुंदह लॉर्ड कृष्ण फुल्ल ब्लॉसमिंग लोचने हूज आईज स संभ्रमै इन ए फ्लरी अभ्युपेतः अप्रोच्ड विथ ग्रीटिंग्स प्राविशत ही एंटर्ड राज रॉयल मंदिरम द पैलेस। ट्रांसलेशन बाय द हम्बल सर्वेंट्स ऑफ हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। विथ वाइड ओपन आईज द मेंबर्स ऑफ द रॉयल हाउसहोल्ड केम फॉरवर्ड इन ए फ्लरी टू लविंगली ग्रीट लॉर्ड मुकुंद एंड दस द लॉर्ड एंटर्ड द रॉयल पैलेस। टेक्स्ट नंबर 38 ट्रांसलेशन एंड टेक्स्ट 39 ट्रांसलेशन परपोर्ट ऑल्सो विल रीड। टेक्स्ट नंबर 38 ट्रांसलेशन। When Queen Pritha saw her nephew Krishna, the master of the three worlds, her heart became filled with love. Rising from her couch with her daughter-in-law, she embraced the Lord. Purport. Queen Kunti's daughter-in-law is the famous Draupadi. Text number 39 translation. King Yudhishthir respectfully brought Lord Govinda the Supreme God of Gods to his personal quarters, the king was so overcome with joy that he could not remember all the rituals of worship. Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, as he brought Krishna within the palace, King Yudhishthir became so confused in his jubilation that he practically forgot what he was to do at that time in order to receive Krishna and worship him properly. Om Agyan Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupaha Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitinamine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Dvaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. We sincerely seek the blessings of all the assembled devotees so that we can properly speak in connection to the verses here. So in these three verses that we are discussing here today, there are three points that come out in these three verses. Lord Krishna is visiting Indraprastha, and in the first verse it was mentioned how everyone is watching the Lord with fully blossoming eyes, full alochana. The second shloka mentioned how Mother Kunti, she sees her nephew, Lord Krishna, and she is extremely happy. And the third shloka mentioned how King Yudhishthir was so overjoyed just by the darshan of Krishna that he did not remember the sequence of worshipping him properly. So we'll try to discuss something in connection to this. Krishna is so beautiful. His beauty is so attractive. It is mentioned, Lavanya Sar. The women of Mathura, they glorify Krishna by saying, who is this person Krishna? So Lavanya Sar is essence of beauty. So what is essence of beauty? Essence of beauty is that each and every body part of Krishna is individually beautiful, and also proportionately beautiful. So his eyes are separately beautiful, his hair is separately beautiful, and all put together, his whole form is also beautiful. So just to compare, just to understand this, something typical that people like is music. So sometimes there are songs which have very good music. It's very attractive music. But the tune may not be very catchy. Sometimes the tune is very beautiful. But the lyrics, sometimes they're like useless lyrics. Pum, 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 like all those, you know, meaningless. Sometimes the lyrics are very meaningful. The song is really very good. The music is also very good. But the singer may not have a very good voice. So think about it. What is a perfect song? The perfect song is, you definitely get inspired. You remember that song. You want to hum it every now and then. But individually, everything has to be perfect. The voice of the singer has to be perfect. The lyrics have to make some sense. The tune has to be very attractive. And everything put together, that's how the beauty comes out. In a meal, if we are having three or four items, what's a perfect meal? Perfect meal is there should be some sweet, there should be some salty, there should be some chili. So all these put together makes a perfect meal. So what is Krishna's beauty? Krishna's beauty is the essence of all these factors. He is completely beautiful, and also every body part is proportionately beautiful. In fact, he is so beautiful that the gopis of Vrindavan, they think that actually the four-headed Brahma, who has four heads, whose body is made up of intelligence, but they say, na dileka laksha koti sabe dila aakhi duti tate dila nimish achadana. This is sabe dila aakhe duti. This Lord Brahma has given everyone two eyes, duti. Na dileka laksha koti. But why he did not give lakhs of eyes? Okay, he gave two eyes. Tate dila nimisha achadana. Even these two eyes also, for every now and then, they get covered because of her blinking process. So then they say, this vidhi, this Brahma, vidhi jada tapodhana rasa shunya taramana nahi jane yogya sri jana. So you know why he did that? Because jada tapodhana, his intelligence is dry. By doing lot of tapasya, Lord Brahma did lot of tapasya. So by all that tapasya, his intelligence has been dry. Rasa shunya taramana. He does not understand what is beauty and what is appreciating beauty. Rasa shunya. Nahi jane yogya srijana. He does not know how to create properly. So this is that beauty of Krishna. Repeatedly in the Bhagavatam, it comes how different devotees, when they see Krishna, it is mentioned, they are drinking the beauty of Krishna with their eyes. They could have said, you know, smelling the beauty, but somehow this is always a recurring theme. Drigbhi pibanti. They are drinking the beauty of Krishna. So it seems, you know, the comparison is that when we drink something very sweet, we never get satiated. Anything sweet when we eat, all of us have a common experience that we want more, we want more, we want more. So that's how Krishna's beauty is compared to that. In the Krishna Karanamrit, Sri Bilva Mangal Thakur, he is glorifying Krishna as Madhuram. So he is saying, oh, this Krishna's beauty, the form of Krishna is so beautiful, it is Madhuram. So it is the essence of all beauty. But then he says, more Madhuram than his form is his face. So already Krishna's form is the essence of beauty. Now his face is more beautiful than his form. Then he says, still more Madhuram is his smile. So already the highest is his form, then more higher than highest is his face, and more higher than the higher of the highest is his beautiful smile. So now can you imagine if Krishna is standing in front of you with his face uncovered and his beautiful smile, what would be the case? So Lord Chaitanya, when he is speaking to Sanatan Goswami, he says, just like in a person, his body is composed of three elements according to Ayurveda. It's kapha, vata and pitta. So for most diseases, one of these elements is in disorder. That's how the disease is caused, if the imbalance happens. So Lord Chaitanya says, now imagine a person has all three in imbalance.
Kapha, Vata, Pitta, all three are in disorder. So such a person, what is his health? He's in convulsions. He's having a lot of problems in his body. Similarly, he says, when I see Krishna, and you know, these three go in disorder, these three, the form of Krishna is visible, the face of Krishna is visible, the smile of Krishna is visible. He says, what do you expect from me? I'll be completely in a diseased condition. And he says, actually, who is the Vaidya for this? So if I have a disease of getting affected by the form, the face and the smile of Krishna, who is the Vaidya? The Vaidya is Krishna only. But this Vaidya is so amazing. He gives me a darshan just sometimes, and most of the times he is not visible to my eyes. In this way my disease is increasing more and more. So I'm just speaking this to help us understand that when we hear with wide open eyes the residents of Indraprastha saw Krishna, there's something there. This is the sight that all of us are longing for. And the Indraprastha residents finally got to see this Krishna. So no wonder they have this wide, full alochana. The blossoming flower, completely blossoming, trying to capture the beauty of Krishna. The second shloka, it was mentioned how Mother Kunti immediately got up from her seat. So Mother Kunti, she is actually senior to Krishna. She is the aunt of Krishna. But she has a very unique position. What is that? She is superior to Krishna as far as her relationship is concerned. But she actually knows, Aho Vishvesha Vishvatman. He says, Vishvesh, you are Vishvesh. Krishna is the Lord of everything. She knows the Tattva also. She knows that Krishna is not just my nephew. He is the Supreme Lord. So we can just imagine the difficulty faced by Kunti Devi. If sometimes you have a relative in your family, and then as time passes, he becomes very prosperous. He becomes some big person. And you may be an ordinary person. So now when you meet that person, you don't understand how to behave with him. You want to just embrace him and maintain the original relationship, jovial relationship. But probably that person now, because he is very prosperous now, he expects another kind of a exchange. Probably he is now used to more formal exchanges. So sometimes you know somebody who was very ordinary, and then after some time he becomes a big person. It's a question how to deal with him now. Should I just go and embrace that person? But if I embrace that person, if that person has lost this kind of exchanges, then how will that person reciprocate? Or sometimes you want to have a formal exchange, but that person is looking at you in such a way, I don't want this formality between us. I just want to touch you. I just want to embrace you. So how do you do that? So we can just imagine the predicament of Kunti Devi. Because previously we heard how when Krishna came, then he touched the feet of Yudhishthir. So they are his brothers. With brothers it's easier. Even though he may be elder in age, but cousin brothers more or less, you know, they are one group. They are together. So he is touching the feet of Yudhishthir, he is embracing Arjun, and he allows Nakul and Sahadev to touch his feet. So there it's easier. But aunt, so Kunti Devi, she is also thinking, you know, how should I deal with Krishna? So in her prayers it is mentioned, she starts with Namo Pankaja Nabhaya. She starts with the navel. Actually the custom is to start with glorifying the Lord's feet. But she says it will be too embarrassing for him if I start from his feet. So she starts from Nabhi, goes up, and then again the last thing is Namo Pankaja Angraya. Then she glorifies the feet of Krishna. So this is Kunti Devi. And we can just feel it. She was sitting on her couch. She's an elderly lady. And she's sitting on her couch, and when she hears that Lord Mukunda has come, she gets up. Now usually the elderly people keep sitting and the young ones will go and touch their feet. But here a lot of things are happening. So Kunti Devi gets up, along with her is the glorious Draupadi. So she also gets up. They also want to meet Krishna. There's a lot of love for Krishna. Definitely, you know, Vrindavan Vasis, Vraj Vasis have love for Krishna. But something that comes up here is Yudhishthir Maharaj. He forgot the sequence of worship of Krishna. Oh, who forgets the sequence of worship? Obviously, this is not a ritual that's happening. It's not that Yudhishthir is remembering how many times the deep has to go on, how many times the argya will go. No, he's just so much in love with Krishna. So the Indraprastha Vasis, they are drinking with wide open eyes. Kunti Devi is in deep love. Yudhishthir Maharaj forgot the sequence of... This is love. This is ecstatic love. This is not ordinary love. So one can compare this to three levels of light. So one is darkness. But this darkness is caused by inability to see. The higher level than that is when you see, when there is light. So first is darkness, then there is light. And the third level is again darkness. How? Imagine somebody who's born blind. So he's never seen light. He does not know what is red color. He does not know what is green color. So it's darkness. Then he undergoes a surgery. He gets vision. So he sees. He sees this bright, colorful world for the first time. Now he understands what is colors. Now he understands what is sunlight. Now he understands what are different types of shades of different colors. So there was darkness in his life. Now he starts seeing. But now when he starts seeing, and now he actually appreciates the different colors and the creation of the Supreme Lord and the wide variety available, there is so much happiness. Now he actually sees the faces of his relatives. So probably a blind person is just touching his mother and his understanding that this person cared for me. Imagine the joy of a blind person when he gets the surgery done, when his eyes are open and he actually sees the face of his loving mother. Any other love, some person he loves. So at that time, out of intense happiness, tears start flowing. Yes, there are tears of pain and there are tears of happiness. So if you think about it, this person is in extreme happiness. He has got vision, which is about darkness. But now because tears are pouring, again he can't see. He can't see. When tears are flowing, you can't see. So again that is blindness for all practical purposes. So this is how all of us are in ignorance. That's why we don't know who is Krishna. And then there are jnanis who know who is Krishna. They know Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So they worship him with all the rituals and a proper procedure. And higher than that are these pure devotees of Krishna, the Pandavas, the Vrajvasis, who are also in kind of ignorance of Krishna. The Vrajvasis don't know who is Krishna. They say, oh, he is just our village cowherd boy. But this ignorance and our ignorance, there's something in between. There is that knowledge in between. So Yudhishthir Maharaj, he's not able to understand. Dhruv, when he saw the Supreme Lord, he was praying to the Supreme Lord to get what he wanted. 6 months of intense tapasya. So he knows this tapasya is meant for whom. His mother had clearly told him, you worship the Supreme Lord, he'll give you what you want. So it's well-directed tapasya. The object of tapasya is very clear. But the interesting thing is, as he's offering tapasya to the Supreme Lord, and when the Supreme Lord appears in front of him, just seeing the Supreme Lord, he becomes speechless. He forgets all the prayers that he wished to offer. He just forgets everything. And then Lord has to touch his forehead with his conch shell to empower him to speak. So we can just understand how many people don't know who is Krishna, then they understand who is Krishna, but actually when you see Krishna, it's, if you're really in that moment, it's very, very natural for you to forget everything and just get lost. That's the beauty of Krishna, that's the presence of Krishna. In the 5th canto of the Bhagavatam, it is mentioned how Lord Rishabhdev, his parents, King Nabhi and his queen Meru Devi, they wanted to have the Supreme Lord as their son. So they performed a yajna. That was a time of performing yajnas. So it is mentioned how they performed a very elaborate yajna. And typically for any yajna, what all is required? The brahmanas have to be well qualified. They have to be pure in their character. The place has to be auspicious. So if you see in the Bhagavatam many times, it is mentioned, this sacrifice was conducted in the Brahmavart place or Kushavart. So always, it's not done in any other place. The place has to be selected. The people who will do the yajna, they have to be selected. The auspicious time has to be selected. The ingredients have to be pure. No mistakes in the pronunciation of all the mantras. So all these complicated, time-consuming, energy-consuming things put together, and then the yajna starts. That's not when the yajna is complete. So in this particular yajna, when King Nabhi performs that yajna, the Supreme Lord actually appears. And when the Supreme Lord appears, the Brahmanas and the king who called him there, they offer prayers to him. So in one of the prayers they mention, actually, because you are the Supreme Lord, you cannot be controlled by anybody. So all these complicated arrangements that we do, it is just to engage our time. We are rich, the king is rich, so what does he do with his wealth? Usually, if you don't engage it in proper purposes, it will pull you down. So, we perform yajna to make sure that our resources are purified. I engage in yajna so that my time is utilized properly, my energy is utilized properly, my resources are utilized properly. I set a proper example for others to worship the Supreme Lord. But whatever said and done, no matter how many elaborate and exquisite arrangements you do for a yajna, there is no guarantee that the Supreme Lord will appear. The Supreme Lord remains independent. So imagine, there are yajnas in which you have to perform years of preparations. The Putra Kameshti yajna that Dashrath Maharaj did. For 1 year, one horse was going around to different kingdoms, followed by 400 generals. 400 strong warriors were following that horse, and wherever the horse went, they challenged that king. He had to accept sovereignty of that king, Dashrath Maharaj. If not, then there was a war. And in this way, conquering all those places where the horse went, they came back, and with that wealth, they did that Putra Kameshti Yajna. So imagine 1 year before the yajna starts, and then there can be so many mistakes, there can be so many impediments. But after all this, there is no guarantee that the Supreme Lord will appear. So there are so many yajnas and you don't know whether the Supreme Lord will appear. It's up to him. Here we see the origin of all those forms, who is so difficult to get. You do whatever you want, but you can't force Krishna. And out of that, this Krishna is the Lavanya Sar. He is the essence of all beauty. And that Krishna, who is unknown in the Vedas, he is making a yatra to his devotees' palace. So usually we go on yatras to Krishna's place. We go to Mayapur, we go to Puri, we go to Vrindavan. Here we see an amazing thing. Krishna along with his family members, with our family members go on a yatra to a holy place. This is Krishna along with his family members, the rarest Krishna, the most beautiful Krishna. He along with his family members is starting a yatra to his devotees' place. So what is it about these devotees that attracts the most difficult to attain Krishna, go to them? It is everyone who tries to get Krishna. Here we see Krishna is going to meet the Pandavas. So we'll try to meditate on this also. We are talking of yajna. So what is yajna? Yajna is the principle of, this is not mine, in the yajna which we hold in our temple during initiation. You will see some words that are being repeated. Idam Vishnave Swaha Idam Na Mama. For every offering, they will make a line, they'll speak a line that is subsequent to that. So, I offer this to Lord Vishnu. And then the next line is Idam Na Mama. Idam Na Mama means, this does not belong to me. Idam Rishikeshaya Swaha Idam Na Mama. For every offering that they make, it's very important. This belongs to Krishna. Idam namama. This does not belong to me. So yajna essentially is that I have received so much, I possess so much, but actually when I came to this world, I had none. And when I go from this world, I will have none. All this belongs to you. I am just a caretaker. So there is one yajna where you offer all these ingredients and still there is no guarantee. So what is it? What yajna are the Pandavas doing that not only there is a guarantee of Krishna appearing in their yajna, but Krishna travels to their home. Krishna makes it a point to go and visit them. It is because they do all these yajnas. They did the Rajasuya yajna and all that. But the greatest thing about the Pandavas is, actually we can say their whole life is a yajna. Whatever activities they do it to please the Supreme Lord. They are willing to be used by the Supreme Lord for His will, for His purposes. So 4.23 Gita, you know, it speaks about this shloka, this concept. So Lord Krishna here, He says, Gata Sangasya Muktasya Jnana Avasthita Chetasa yagyaya acharatha karma samagram pravilīyate. So Krishna is mentioning here, the work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. So usually our concept of yagya is agnihotra yagya, is like a fire yagya. But Krishna, and then he speaks that famous Brahma, Brahma, Brahma verse. Brahma arpanam, Brahma havir, Brahma agnav, Brahmana hutam, Brahma ivatena gantavyam, Brahma karma samadhina. Famous attractive shloka to those who want to just talk about Brahma, Brahma. But what is the Krishna saying there? He's saying if somebody lives his life in that spirit that idam namama, but this belongs to Krishna. He's saying yagyaya acharatah karma. His karma, his activities, his life becomes a yagya. These are the words of Krishna himself. So this is not some mental concoction. We are imagining. This Krishna who is saying his life becomes a yagya. And then he says, when such a life is there, then the person who is offering, he is also spiritual. The spoon with which he is offering, that is also spiritual. The offering that is happening is also spiritual. The fire is spiritual. The consummation is spiritual. And the result is also spiritual. That is the life of the Pandavas. So, the Pandavas are so attractive to Krishna because they offered their lives in yagya to Krishna. Now, is it that only the Pandavas offered their lives in yagya? No. Bhishma and Drona also offered their lives in yagya. Yes, but not to Krishna. Bhishma had high principles. Drona is born of a very high family. So what happened to their principles? They also offered their principles, their high standards in sacrifice to serve the throne of Hastinapur. So in one sense, if you see, all of us are compromising, all of us are making choices where we are consciously offering some part of our free will, something that belongs to us for the pleasure of somebody around us. So in that sense, yagya is always happening. We are constantly trying to please somebody. Sometimes it's in a relationship, sometimes it might be a professional relationship. You are forced to do yagya for the pleasure of your boss. Saturday, Sunday you want to stay home, but your boss orders, idam na mama. It's alright, Saturday, Sunday I come to the office. So Bhishma and Drona also offered sacrifice and the Pandavas also offered sacrifice. The question is, they offered it to the right person. And that is what we have to learn from the Pandavas. So, we'll just think about a few points which we can learn from the Pandavas. The first thing is that the Pandavas execute the plan of the Lord. So every company, every organization, it has a CEO. And the CEO sets the vision for that organization. So this organization, what are its aims, what are its goals? Similarly, this whole universe, the entire creation, is also Krishna's property. It is Krishna's organization. Who's the CEO for this? It's Krishna. So his plan for this universe is called Dharma. That is what he wants. He does not want certain people in certain positions. Essentially, he wants Dharma to prevail. So those who carry out this plan of the CEO, they attract his mercy. So the Pandavas, they do it on Krishna's terms. They do what Krishna wants. It's a struggle. We have many plans. So what is success in this context? For us, success has to be visible. Visible success means there can be different definitions of success. Financial prosperity, social prosperity, many people should know me, I should become famous. Different ways of evaluating success. So what is Krishna's success? Krishna's success is that you try to follow his orders sincerely. So every time when things are supposed to be done, we'll see repeatedly in the Pandavas' life, they consult Krishna. They are knowledgeable. Who is Yudhishthir? He is Dharma Raj. We are talking of Dharma. So when we are talking of Dharma, and Dharma Raj Yudhishthir is the child of Dharma Raj. Does he know Dharma? He knows Dharma. So what is right in this situation? We consult the literatures where it is mentioned, oh, great people behaved in the... So he is Dharmaraj, he is Yamraj, Yamraj's child. Who knows better Dharma than Dharmaraj, who is in charge of Dharma? But yet we will see, Yudhishthir Maharaj, the Pandavas, they consult Krishna. So what do you feel? They have their opinions. It's not that their opinions are boxed up. Sometimes they express their opinion. Krishna, we feel it is like this. But then when Krishna will say, no, I feel it should be like this, they change themselves. So this is that wonderful ability of the Pandavas, that their success is not in external achievements, but their success is in their internal alignment. They always align themselves with the Supreme Lord's will. When things go wrong, usually we go for external retaliation. But devotees go for internal reorientation. The Newton's law, which is a universal law, it states for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. This law does not apply only in one condition, the devotees. They do not retaliate. Their response is no response. So if you, by this, in the context of the discussion, if you see, what did not go wrong in the Pandava's life? Everything that could go wrong went wrong. But the most interesting thing is, even after everything goes wrong, they say there is no opposite reaction and definitely there is no equal reaction. Let's see. Let's see what is Krishna's plan in all this. So, it's really very difficult. When Chitraketu Maharaj is cursed by Parvati Devi, apparently it's not a big fault, and Srila Prabhupada mentions how Chitraketu Maharaj, he raised that point. How could Lord Shiva, who is a speaker and an emblem of renunciation, how could he have Parvati Devi sitting on his lap? When he said that, actually his concern was not for Lord Shiva, his concern was for the followers of Lord Shiva, because generally, unconsciously, it is the nature of followers to imitate their master rather than to follow the master. Somehow, that's the nature of this world. It's easier to imitate the actions of your master than to follow his words, than to follow his principles. So Chitraketu Maharaj was thinking, Lord Shiva is speaking about renunciation, but his actions, in one sense, are contradicting his words. So what about his followers? Their followers may not have that fine, refined understanding, and they might imitate Lord Shiva. So that's why he said, how amusing it is that Lord Shiva is speaking on the renunciation, but he has Parvati Devi on his lap. But Parvati Devi took it very seriously and she cursed him. So what is Chitraketu Maharaj's response? He says, he folded his hands and he says, Ambike. He says, oh my mother, actually your mother of the universe, Jagdamba, these are the words that he uses. He says, your so-called curse is also a blessing for me. And in a very sweet way, he accepts such a heavy curse. He's on his way up. He's on his way to get darshan. That's what Angira Muni and Narad Muni blessed him with when he got that realization. And now he's cursed to a subhuman species of a man-eating giant. Now he's going to become Asur, Vritrasur. So he's going up and then he's cursed for a small, well-intentioned comment. And he accepts it very thankfully. So then Lord Shiva, when he speaks in one shloka, he calls Parvati Devi very beautiful. He says, Drishtavati Asi Sushroni. He says, my dear Parvati Devi, you are the most beautiful woman. There's nobody more beautiful than you. But then he says, just see, Drishtavati, Harer Adbhuta Karmana. But just see, Britya Brityanam, he says, just see the wonderful activities, Adbhuta Karmana, of those who are the servants of the Supreme Lord Krishna. What is that? He's saying, this person, he had every reason to retaliate. He had every reason to fight back. He had every reason to make a case and prove point by point how he is right and you are wrong. He did not do that. So Prabhupada writes there in the purport, Lord Shiva is saying, you are beautiful by your body,
But he is beautiful by his character. He has outsurpassed you by his reaction of no reaction. In a situation where everyone would have flared up, he became thankful, he became grateful. And that's why, my dear Parvati, although you are the most beautiful person in this world, this person has far excelled you. So this is how we excel, or we become beautiful. We become beautiful not by retaliating, we become beautiful, we become attractive by our forgiveness. So this is renunciation, we could call it in a very simple way, renunciation. There is a renunciation of objects and there is a renunciation of opinions. There is a renunciation of what I think is right, what others say is right. In the Gita, right from the beginning, Krishna speaks this. He speaks about renunciation in the 18th chapter, but that's far away. In the first chapter, we hear how when Arjuna is posing his arguments not to fight. So, well-balanced, logical, scriptural, well-thought-of reasons to not fight. How fighting with your elders is wrong. And what is Krishna's response? Anaryam, ajushtam, aswargyam, klaibhyam. It's not fitting for a gentleman to speak this. It will not earn you heaven and it will not... This is not fitting for you. This is not gentlemanly. Anaryam, akirtikaram. This will cause you infamy. And quite strong words, klaibhyam. So he is saying, you want to renounce the position of being a king by not fighting. I want a higher renunciation than that. I want a renunciation of your concepts. You think I should not fight, and based on that you are willing to renounce the position of a king. I am saying you fight and you renounce the conception that you know what is right. This is more subtler renunciation. In the Bhagavatam, right from the first canto, this renunciation is expressed. What is that? Vidura speaks to Dhritarashtra. Now your life is complete. Renounce. Go. So then Dhritarashtra quits home. Then Pandavas retire timely. The Pandavas also, after all. Interestingly, the Bhagavatam is very revolutionary. Why? Would you speak about renunciation in the beginning of any book? So right there in the first canto, there are two chapters speaking about renunciation. Dhritarashtra goes to the forest, renouncing everything. And the Pandavas also retire timely. But before that, there are many other renunciations that are talked of. What is that? Right in the first shloka of the Bhagavatam, it is mentioned, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. What does it mean? Oh my dear Lord Krishna, son of Vasudev, I offer my obeisances to you. You are the source of everything. So before I started reading the Bhagavatam, I always thought Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Lord. He is the origin of all incarnations. That is the primary belief amongst people. And from a limited perspective, it's true. But the kind of picture that Bhagavatam is giving us, we understand Lord Krishna is actually the origin of all incarnations. So I had to give up my misconception. I had to give up that conception that I know who is the Supreme Lord. Now this conception of knowing who is the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, it is Vishnu, is much higher than the conception of the ignorant masses of this world who feel this ordinary person made up of five elements, he is the Supreme Lord, or this demigod is the Supreme Lord, and they have their own conceptions. Actually the Supreme Absolute Truth is energy and so on. There are so many misconceptions. Definitely the conception that Lord Vishnu is the origin of all, not all these ordinary people, is much higher than this. But the Bhagavatam is not just about ordinary corrections. Bhagavatam is about very deep corrections. So Bhagavatam is saying, not even Lord Vishnu. That is much better as compared to the people of this world, but I want you to rise higher. The real fact is, actually it is Lord Krishna who is even the source of Lord Vishnu. Then we see Narada teaching Vyasadeva. So Vyasadeva has written all knowledge. He has written what is right, what is wrong. And then Vyasadeva is corrected by Narada Muni. Unless there is a linking process of devotional service. Ahetuki apratihata. Till that time, no suprasidati. There is no satisfaction. So we earn money for satisfaction. Whatever we do, we eat for satisfaction. We read, watch, hear for satisfaction.
in very clear terms, Narad Muni corrects Vyasa saying, you want satisfaction, you want to teach what is satisfaction, it can be attained only by devotional service to Krishna, without any motivation and without interruption. This is revolutionary. It's not ordinary. Then there's another deeper renunciation. Renunciation of concepts. What is that? The emperor of the world, Parikshit, is cursed by a small, impudent, inexperienced Brahman. He's a small boy. He's playing games. That's what is described. Sringi was playing games with his friends. That's how he's doing ordinary activities. He's not studying in a Gurukul when this incident happened of Shamik Rishi being insulted by Parikshit Maharaj. So he's such an ordinary person and he curses the emperor of this world. So what would you expect? The right thing to do is, obviously, the emperor should punish this child. And being a Rajarshi, he could counteract the curse also. But again, our conception of what is right and what is wrong is challenged. And we see, he accepts that curse and he says, alright, I have 7 days and 7 nights. What best I could do in the limited time that I have. And then he goes and hears Bhagavatam. So this renunciation, there's another revolutionary concept. We all thought that Bhishma was on the side of the wrong before reading the Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavatam it is mentioned how Bhishma is actually internally pure devotee, always meditating on Krishna. So there are so many concepts that are challenged and upturned. They're actually upturned by the Bhagavatam right in the first canto. So yes, there is Pandavas retires timely, there is Dhritarashtra goes to the forest, which is renunciation. But Bhagavatam right from its outset wants to bring us to the renunciation, a higher, more subtler renunciation of our concepts. Lord Chaitanya is very famous for teaching renunciation. So one of the famous shlokas where Lord Chaitanya is instructing his followers, the six Goswamis, he says, Krishna bhakti Krishna prema seva pravartan lupta tirtha uddhar ara vairagya shikshan. I want you to explain Krishna's devotional service, establish centers for cultivation of love of Krishna, excavate lost places of pilgrimage and teach people how to adopt the renounced order, ara vairagya shikshan. So it seems Lord Chaitanya is also into this renunciation. He's teaching. I want you to teach the people the art of renunciation. So now when we hear this word renunciation, it's quite scary actually. Renunciation, is it renunciation of my family? Is it renunciation of my possessions? Do these people now want all my money? What do they want? What is this vairagya that he's talking of? So to help us understand, we'll go through one shloka where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is glorifying Lord Chaitanya. In this verse also, this word vairagya comes. So here also it is mentioned, vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga shikshartham ekaha purushaha purana. So here it is mentioned, vairagya vidya. What is the art of renunciation? And nija bhakti yoga. And to teach bhakti yoga to himself. These two things, shikshartham ekaha purushaha purana. The purusha purana, the original supreme lord, appeared in this world to teach these two things, vairagya vidya and nija bhakti yoga. So now we feel, what is this vairagya? That again it becomes scary. So the translation for this vairagya is, Prabhupada is saying, it's not renunciation of things. It is detachment from everything that does not help one develop Krishna consciousness. So if things are stopping you from developing Krishna consciousness, it means that. But if our conceptions, our ideas, our philosophical attachments, if they also obstruct us from developing love for Krishna, then Lord Chaitanya has come specifically to deal with our subtlest attachments. That's what he wants to teach us. He taught Sanatana Goswami how to get detached from the blanket. So there was a blanket and then he said, oh, I'm not happy with this blanket, and then Sanatana Goswami gave it. But was that the end of teaching renunciation to Sanatana Goswami? He also taught Sanatana Goswami much more deeper renunciation. When he developed source over all his body and he was thinking, oh, Lord Chaitanya comes and embraces me, and when he embraces me, my pores, they ooze pus and they dirty the body of the Supreme Lord. So I will end my life by going under the cart of Lord Jagannath. He wanted to quit his body. out of concern for the Supreme Lord, out of concern that he should not contaminate the body of the Supreme Lord when he embraces. But Lord Chaitanya, he made him renounce not just that external blanket, but also his conception that your body is not your body. Your body is my property. I want to achieve many things through you. So you have to maintain this body even if you feel it is not worth it. He made him renounce his misconception. So many places, we can talk similarly about Rup Goswami. We can talk about Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami wanted to run away from his family. He ran away and he met Lord Chaitanya. So what did Lord Chaitanya say? He said, don't do this. You can't run away. Go back. So he has come to deal Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Shikshartham Eka Purusha Purana. He has come to teach Vairagya Vidya. So now he is Vairagya. He is saying, I want to give my life to you. He says, no, this is not Vairagya. Go back. When the right time comes, then you come. This is not the right time. So he sends him back. Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, Gopal Bhatt Goswami, they wanted to come with the Lord in their childhood. What did Lord Chaitanya say? Go and serve your parents first. After your parents leave, after you executed all your duties, then you come. So this is, if we actually think about it, Lord Chaitanya is giving us, yes, there is external renunciation. When Raghunath Das Goswami would drink only three cups of buttermilk, that pleased Lord Chaitanya. When he was eating that spoiled rice, it was pleasing Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya came and snatched it from him. Said, I want this most tastiest rice. And this spoiled rice, rejected by the cows of Jagannath Puri. So yes, there is external renunciation. But if you see the lives of his followers, he forced them, he pushed them to also follow much more deeper renunciation of their misconceptions. So actually this is the Vairagya Vidya that Lord Chaitanya wants to teach us. This is the Vairagya Vidya that Bhagavatam wants to teach us. This is the Vairagya Vidya that Lord Krishna wants to teach us right from the first chapter of Gita. Change your lens. Change the way you look at this world. If you think it is yours, then there is a question of idam na mama. But actually if you feel this is originally the Supreme Lord's, and in this way, if you lead your life, then there are no problems. So this same Lord Chaitanya, who teased Vairagya Vidya to the six Goswamis and their emblems of renunciation, even today, what did he do with Grihasthas like Vasudeva Bhatt, Vasudeva Datta? When Vasudeva Datta was seen to spend all his money, whatever he would earn, परम उदार इहो ये दिने ये ऐसे सेई दिन व्यय करे नाही राखे शेषे. So Vasudeva Datta, he had a family, but he would earn money and in his so called Vairagya, he would just spend it all. So Lord Chaitanya, he became concerned about him and he called Shivanand Sen and he said, Grihastahaya na iho chahiye sanchay, sanchaya na haile kutumba bharana na hoy. So he is a grihastha, he should save money, but he does not save money. Sanchaya na hile, and if he does not save money, kutumba bharana na hoy, the family life cannot go on. So I appoint you as the caretaker of this grihastha. You are also a grihastha, you know how to save money. So you become a caretaker for this, take care of this grihastha. So if Lord Chaitanya was only into external renunciation, he would have been very happy. Oh, you are grihastha, nice, give up all your money, don't take care of your families, do whatever you want in the name of renunciation. So this shows Lord Chaitanya's definition and expectation of renunciation is much more subtler, and we have to go through these examples so as to understand what does he want from us. So we are discussing all this because we are discussing this in the context of the Pandavas. What is their renunciation? Recently, during one Janmashtami festival, we were having in one university Janmashtami celebration, we were having Abhishek. So one of the students who is watching that Abhishek, he comes to me and he says, I want to ask you an important question. So what is that? Says, you know, all the milk that you are pouring on this murti, where will it go? So he had certain conceptions. Probably he saw in some temple it just going waste, or probably he had some conceptions that, you know, this milk is such a costly, nourishing commodity, so why are they wasting it by pouring it on a metal form? So he came and asked me this, very concerned. Then I clarified, all this milk which is bathing the deity is being collected and it will again be circulated to all of you. All of you will drink this milk. So then he became pacified. So I'm just trying to explain how if we have a conception, milk should not be wasted. Milk should not be, it should be given to the poor people of this world. So then even when the Supreme Lord is being worshipped, we try to find some fault there. Which is very natural, given the situation today, how people have misrepresented religion. But the point was, we will bathe the Supreme Lord and then actually distribute it again. It's not that either we bathe the Lord or we distribute it to people. No, we'll bathe also and we'll distribute also. The point was how people are stuck in their conceptions. So we have to learn to miss our misconceptions. So just in short, I just wanted to highlight certain points of the Pandavas. After the Mahabharata war, Yudhishthira Maharaj sat on the throne. He is the emperor now. So of all the five Pandavas who are selflessly offering their lives as a perpetual yajna to the Supreme Lord, only one person could sit on the throne, and it was Yudhishthira Maharaj. So no other person complained, no other said, can we have a joint rule? Can I also share the throne with Yudhishthira Maharaj? Yudhishthira Maharaj is called Ajatashatru. Ajatashatru means his enemy was never born. What about the others? For Arjun, was an enemy born? Yes. Karna was his sworn enemy. There is only one mission in the life of Karna. He is willing to do good, he is willing to do bad, he is willing to cheat, he is willing to help. All of that for one purpose, if it can help him kill Arjun. Deep envy for Arjun. What about Bhima? Duryodhan and Dushasan, their whole meditation throughout their whole life, how to kill Bhima, is it not? So, what are the qualities for an emperor? The qualities for an emperor is definitely power. He should be very powerful, he should be very intelligent. But one of the very important and critical qualities for a powerful leader, somebody who is, who's guiding, who's ruling, is that he has to be very unbiased. You may be a powerful person, you may be an intelligent person, but if you are a biased person, you cannot sit on a high position. You always have to see the bright side of all the mistakes that are happening. So, there are some things about Arjun that caused Karna to envy him. There are certain things about Bhima that caused Dushasan and Duryodhan to envy him. So, Krishna, he says, amongst all the Pandavas, I am Arjun. The best is Arjun. In the Gita he says that. But while putting on the throne, he does not put Arjun on the throne. He puts Yudhishthira on the throne. So if Yudhishthira is the best ruler, who should hear the Gita? He's the ruler. He's the best to sit on the throne. So he should hear. He's a Rajarshi. And Gita is meant for the Rajarshis. But to speak the Gita, Krishna does not choose Yudhishthira. He chooses Arjun. So he speaks the Gita to him. He marries his own sister, Subhadra, out of love to Arjun. He says, I have selected you because bhakto sime sakha cheti, anusuyave. You are dear to me, you are non-envious of me, you are positive, you are my devotee, you are my friend. That's why I have selected you. In the situation where Ashwatthama was to be punished, one party says, kill him. Another party says, leave him. So then Krishna, there it is mentioned in one shloka, evam parikshita dharma krishnena arjuna chodita. So it is mentioned that whole incident was orchestrated by Krishna. Evam parikshita dharma, Krishna wanted to test Arjun, how much you have understood what is my understanding. I want certain things to happen. So, one way to glorify is Jai, Jai. Another way is to actually internalize the principles of the person whom you are trying to serve. Evam parikshita dharma krishnena arjuna chodita. Krishna, he sided with Bhima actually. Bhima was saying, just kill him off. How could he kill our sleeping sons, unarmed? This is wrong. He is an aggressor. Atatai, kill him. The only fit punishment for Ashwatthama is killing him. And Draupadi and Yudhishthira were saying, whatever said and done, he is the son of our guru. As a form of gratitude towards our guru, we should not kill. So it is mentioned, now Krishna is watching him. Evam parikshita. So what is it? What did Arjun do? Arjun said, let me take the middle path. So he gives a very strange haircut to Ashwathama. He takes off the jewel that he is proud of and in this way insults him. So he kills him, at the same time does not kill him. And it is mentioned Krishna was very happy with this decision. He killed, did not kill. So there are places where Arjun shines. An amazing, intelligent person, character person. He refused Urvashi. And then that same Arjun is also insulted by Krishna when, after Krishna's disappearance, when Arjun is escorting his 16,000 wives, he gets defeated by ordinary infidel cowherd men. He who yena me apharitam tejo deva vismapanam mahat. Arjun is saying, I defeated Mahadev in fighting and I could not defeat this infidel cowherd man. It is only a plan of Krishna. Yes. So when Krishna wanted him to excel, he has created situations where Arjun shone forth. And when Krishna wanted to show him, Krishna also showed him, you are just an instrument, nimitta matra. Yes, I used you. So then who is favorite of Krishna? So he chose Arjun as this, this and this. But then finally he put Yudhishthir on the throne. What about Bhima? Is Bhima not dear to Krishna? I was reading Shripad Madhvacharya's Mahabharata Tatparya Nirane. So there it was mentioned. Who is the main protagonist of the Mahabharata war? Who caused the whole war? So if you decode the whole sequence of events, it comes that actually it is Duryodhan's thirst for power and his unwillingness to accept any other solution other than I should sit on the throne. And then it led to so many sequence of events. So Madhvacharya was saying, the main person who is the most important enemy, who is the most important cause of all causes with regards to the Mahabharata war, it is Duryodhan. Who killed Duryodhan? So he said, Vayu, Bhima. So the most important warrior in Mahabharata is actually Bhima. Yes, they are Hari Sarvottama, Jiva, Vayu Jivottama. One time we stayed in one Dharmashala belonging to Madhvacharya Sampradaya. Outside the Dharmashala it was written, Hari Sarvottama, the best of all beings is Hari, but Vayu Jivottama, of all the Jivas, the best is Vayu. So they have a lot of affection for Bhima. A lot of affection for Hanuman. So this actually, you know, all this killing Drona, Kripa, Bhishma and all that, they are just ordinary people. Yes? Who is the main person? The main person is Duryodhan. Who killed Duryodhan? It was Bhima. So who is the main important person on the side of Dharma? It is actually Bhima. And then they said, it was written, Jarasandha also. 20,800 kings have been imprisoned by Jarasandha and to offer them as Narabali. Who killed Jarasandha? It is Bhima. So who is the best Pandav? It is Bhima. So now, what is happening here? If you see individually, from one perspective, Yudhishthir outshines Arjun and Bhima. In that, he is totally Ajatashatru. He is unbiased. In some situations, Arjun outshines others. There is something about Arjun that attracts Krishna. And Krishna chooses him to be his eternal companion. Whenever I descend into this world, you also descend with me. And there is something extraordinary about Bhima that Krishna did not use Arjun to kill Duryodhan. Krishna did not use Arjun to kill Jarasandha. He chose Bhima. He guided Bhima to kill Jarasandha. So why are we speaking all this? Because we are speaking, the most interesting thing is, although individually all of them are great stalwarts, but when Yudhishthira sits on the throne, Vayu Jivottama, Vayu does not say, I want to sit on the throne. Finally, it is I who killed the root cause of all causes. Arjun does not say, wait a minute, who received Gita? Yes, we are celebrating Gita Jayanti. Sarva Upanishado Gao. The essence of all Vedic scriptures is the Gita. So who was chosen? I was chosen. Who was given his sister's hand in marriage? I was given. So can we reevaluate who's fit to sit on the throne? There is absolutely no comparison between them. There is absolutely no tug of war between them. All of them individually great. But when Krishna wants to put Yudhishthir on the throne, they are happy. When Krishna chooses Arjun to speak the Gita, Yudhishthir does not say, I also want to. When Krishna chooses Bhim to do extraordinary tasks that nobody else could do, they are happy with it. So when these Pandavas, they do this yajna of their internal yajna. What is that internal yajna? My conceptions, my opinions. They are willing to sacrifice that. This Vairagya Vidya, when they show, then that attracts the most rare form of Krishna, who is not visible ordinarily. He is attracted to the Pandavas. So usually a magnet attracts iron. Here in this place we see the iron is sitting in Hastinapur and the magnet is coming from Dwarka to meet them. So this is what I feel we could learn from this episode of Lord Krishna visiting Indraprastha. Why does he visit? He melts seeing how these five Pandavas in all situations they are together. They use all that they have to serve Krishna, but never fight, never compare, never envy each other. So the more we could learn from this, we would also benefit, and that is what Lord Chaitanya is trying to teach us. Vairagya Vidya, Shikshartham Ekam Purusha Purana. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much for your patient listening. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai.